Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast. Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 492 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a lot to talk about today. There's been a lot in the news lately. So we're going to discuss the Portland Trailblazers now that Damian Lillard is being shut down to have surgery. We're going to talk the latest on the Clippers, who might go into seller mode at the trade deadline. We'll discuss the rumors about Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris, all the latest there. And then we're going to talk John Collins, who we recently brought up, and he must have been listening to the pod because he started to air his grievances publicly this week as well. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is someone who I can only assume is recoiling after the Brooklyn Nets destroyed his Chicago Bulls last night. Morten Jensen, how's it going, my man?
It's going well. Honestly, that I don't have any qualms with it because it was a fair win. The Bulls had virtually no forward defenders at all. Derek Jones Jr. went out 30 seconds into the game. You know, they don't have Javonte Green. They don't have Alex Caruso. So their defense right now is shot to pieces. And you're going up against Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. I mean, what are you going to do there? So I don't think this was in any way an indicator that Chicago isn't up for a challenge. I think they were just low on bodies, to be honest with you.
That's fair. And if anything, it might incentivize them to get more active at the trade deadline. So maybe yes. It's a loss that you're happy they suffered in some respects.
Yeah, no. I mean, overall, I just think looking at where that team was last year compared to where they are now, I just don't mind a loss. I mean, they're still the best team in the East right now in terms of record. So, like, again, this is what I said going into the year. It doesn't really matter as long as they play competitive basketball, and they are way overshooting expectations right now. This is just cream at this point.
That's fair. Let's go to a team where that is not overshooting expectations, and it's only going to get worse from here. The Portland Trailblazers are 16 and 24. They are the 10th seed in the West right now, only a game ahead of the Sacramento Kings. And on Wednesday, Brian Windhorst of ESPN reported that Trailblazers star Damian Lillard is planning to have surgery to address a lingering abdominal injury. It's likely to keep him out for at least 6 to 8 weeks. But this is from Windy. His recovery timeline could be determined by the course the Blazers take from here. Yes. So basically that means if they tank or sell off pieces at the deadline and they're nowhere near the play-in tournament, he's done for the year. Like, there's a chance he comes back late in the year, but in all likelihood, we have seen the last of Damian Lillard this season, which is a huge bummer. But at the same time, he's apparently been battling this injury like for multiple years, he's been saying, which is absurd that he has been this good through it. Wendy reported he aggravated it playing for Team USA at the Olympics, which explains, you know, he was not his usual self there. And it was like, what's going on with Dame? And then that has since carried over to the season. So before we get into this, first, just a shout out to my guy, Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report, who has been all over this story. He had a story published Monday saying, like, this is the only course of action that makes sense for the Blazers. Like, Dame clearly is not himself. They need to just shut him down. And there are benefits to that approach long term. So, more now that we know, you know, Dame is out indefinitely, CJ is still recovering from the collapsed lung.
Again, no, he's actually healthy. He is healthy. He is not back because he is expecting the birth of, I think, his first child. And has basically said he's not coming back until after the delivery.
Well, he's going to be feeling great after that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Fred VanVleet had the new dad bump. Maybe CJ gets it too. Either way, you know, the Blazers are not going to have Dame for a while. What do you think that means for them, both, you know, in terms of where they stand this season? And then the direction that they should take going into the trade deadline.
Look, we're 40 games into the season for the Blazers, and they've won 16 games. So I think that describes where they are as an NBA organization at this point. I realize there's been injuries. I realize all this and that. But, I mean, Neil Olshey getting fired. This year's team just needs to get washed away and rebuilt next season. I don't think there's any point in pretending that even if Dame comes back at the end of the year, that they're close to being a championship level contender, for example, because they're not. This is a team that needs to just completely reinvent itself. And I think the biggest thing I have for me, Brian, is I think everything is open game. Because you really have to ask yourself, with the pieces that we have around Dame, can we put them on the market and can we, through those means, build a title contender around Damian Lillard within the next year or two? Because least we forget, he's going to be 32 this year. He's not going to be a spring chicken when that retooling process is completed. So that's a question they have to ask themselves. I think I have the answer. I don't think any of the pieces that they have on the roster right now is a good enough trade asset to really propel them into championship contention if they make the right moves. Because even if they do make the right moves and optimize their assets, they're not getting a Jaylen Brown. They're not getting a secondary, you know, superstar. And like Ben Simmons, yeah, they could get him, but he's not a superstar. Like, he is a complimentary all-star who is an elite defender who may put a ceiling or a cap on their offensive ceiling, but does raise their floor, especially defensively. But who's that guy out there who can really make Dame all in, motivated that they can win a championship within the next 3 years? I don't see that name being available. And if that player is available, I don't see them having the trade package to begin with. So for me, it's just tank the ever-living crap out of this year, get the highest pick imaginable in 2022, and see what you get there. Because if you win the lottery and you go with, for example, a Jabari Smith out of Auburn, that also gives you some level of comfortability that you can trade off Dame because you're starting to pivot into something new. And then if you trade Dame for additional draft picks or young players, well, hell, then you just kind of started a youth evolution and maybe even geared it forward 2 years because you got more assets in.
Or, I mean, they could always trade that pick, too. Like, if they get a top three, top five pick, and they decide they want to go into win now mode with Dame to give him one last real shot, they're able to trade that pick and potentially bring in some actual win now help for him. But
sure, but yeah. Is that going to be enough? Like, who, when you look at the league overall, Brian, look at who you have to knock off. You have to knock off the Golden State Warriors. You have to knock off the Milwaukee Bucks. You have to knock off the Brooklyn Nets. even if you win number one, what player is out? Let's say you can get Cat for number one. Okay, then you have Dame Cat. That's a strong duo. Still, I would put them far below the likes of Milwaukee and I even forgot to mention Phoenix. Like, it's for some reason they're an afterthought. They shouldn't be.
Memphis is on the come up too. Like,
Memphis is on the come up. Chicago's on the come up. I mean, there are a lot of teams that can compete. And I just wonder what the hell the plan here is, because to me, it seems like you can try to rush this, but it's not going to go well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think ultimately, I don't see a way they're going to be able to build a title contender around him, barring, like, you know, if some team just wildly overpays for one of their other guys, it only takes one team. So we can't say that for certain. But I think, you know, if you're assigning probability here, the overwhelming likelihood is that they've just screwed up too many things and that ship has sailed. But I mean, it's pretty clear based on, you know, Dame and the team stance that they aren't considering moving him. Like, he wants to stay. They want to keep him. So you have to, you know, divorce like what is logical from the stance that they are going to take.
Oh yeah, because that always goes well when you separate logic from the equation. Yep.
You got to just work with what the team is giving you. But I agree with you that, you know, everything else should be on the table. Like, if they have no chance of making the play-in tournament, or even if they do, you know, if they decide, like, look, we're not going to rush Dame back. We don't care about the play-in tournament. We want to prioritize the high pick. I think they should be in that mindset. Like, everything should be geared toward the draft at this point and toward the 22-23 season. I don't think they should care about the play-in. Like, missing the playoffs would be good for them. So if they're not planning on re-signing Robert Covington and Yusuf Nurkic, both of whom are unrestricted free agents this summer, they got to go. Just trade them wherever you can, get whatever you can for them. You just can't afford to lose them for absolutely nothing. Anthony Simons is the really interesting one, because he has been playing very well as of late in the absence of Lillard and McCollum. And I wonder, you know, he's a restricted free agent this summer, and given how well he's played and his youth, I would think they would want to keep him. But again, you already have next season, $42.5 million in Dame, $33.3 million in McCollum, and $16.8 million in Norman Powell. Like, something's got to give there. So,
well, that shouldn't be Anthony Simons.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I wonder if Powell is the sneaky trade chip here.
Of course he is.
They just re-signed him to a 5-year, $90 million this summer.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty reasonable deal for the production you're getting out of him. You know, I think McCollum, it just doesn't, like, Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, you know, talked to some executives and they're saying, like, we're not sure if he has positive trade value at all. Like, they might have to attach stuff to get off of him, which especially this year doesn't really make sense anymore. But Powell, I think, does have value. And I know Jake Fisher of BR has an article coming out. By the time you guys listen to this, it'll be out. He said roughly a dozen teams pursued Powell ahead of the trade deadline last year.
Yeah.
And there's some belief that he would be open to a new destination. He mentioned New Orleans in particular. And we know that New Orleans is trying to make the play-in tournament this year in the hope that Zion Williamson does return. So
I hate that for Powell. Yeah.
Going to New Orleans?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're still not going to make the playoffs this year. I want him on a contender. I think he's good. I really like his play. I don't like what the Pelicans have done this year. Mostly, I know they become a lot better as of late, so I'm not counting them out, not criticizing them. But I would much rather see him go to Memphis, for example.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, right? I mean, they're a buyer too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And they, I mean, they have the Kyle Anderson contract for salary matching.
Hell, Utah could also be fun. They need a little bit extra scoring punch. Someone who can come in and sometimes take the ball and just do stuff with it outside of having it go to Donovan Mitchell by default, or Jordan Clarkson, who is... Jordan Clarkson is like the homeless man version of Norman Powell, I think.
So yeah, especially this year.
Right. So might as well get in the proper guy right there instead. But no, I just think he makes sense for a contender. He's going to be 29. He is a two-way player. You can bring him off the bench in a six-man role. You can start him at the two. Hell, you can even start him at the three. He's just one of those high-utility players. So I would be pretty shocked if a team in the top six of each conference doesn't go after him. Hell, you're Philly. Philly would be a wonderful destination for him.
Yeah. You would have the same concerns that you do in Portland right now with like a pretty small backcourt or pretty small 1-3.
Yeah, but they don't have Joel Embiid.
Right. And I mean,
so I'm okay with that.
We'll get to the Sixers later. They have bigger pressing matters at hand. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, it sounds like we are on the same page. Like Portland should, I don't want to call this like tanking. It's like a sneak tank. Like an injury has forced your hand. And it's basically like what happened to the Warriors. Like it's just like a soft reset where an injury forced you to take a 1 year step back. The Warriors end up with James Wiseman and they start to prioritize some of their younger guys. And, you know, a guy like Jordan Poole hits and all of a sudden it's like, oh crap. Like they still got their veteran stalwarts. Like Klay Thompson just returned. Draymond's still there. Steph is still there. But now we have some intriguing younger pieces as well. Like if Anthony Simons can parlay this season into something more, Nasir Little gets more opportunity because, you know, like what are the Blazers playing for? You might as well play Nasir Little for 35 minutes a game at this point.
Yeah.
Like it could help their long-term future, even if it's a step back this year. So I hope Blazers fans are in the same mindset of like this season is gone. Like the one dangerous thing is that the rest of the West is so weak in the play-in and below. Like I think the Lakers will end up in the play-in, assuming health from this point. You know, like assuming AD comes back relatively soon and LeBron stays healthy, they'll be one of the four teams in there. Minnesota, I think, just by default, because the rest, like OKC and the Rockets aren't going to make it. You assume Portland is going to slip out now. The Clippers, who we'll talk about in a second, they might slip out depending on their health. So it's like you almost are like forced to qualify for the play-in, but I want the Blazers not to be preoccupied with that. Like let the Kings and the Pelicans go into buyer mode and convince themselves that like they are potential contenders and like, you know, are prioritizing the play-in above all else. Slip below them in the standings, and you have a higher chance of getting a top four pick, or if nothing else, you have a higher floor.
Right. I agree with all of that. I just think for Portland, it is so important they don't fall into any traps of, oh, let's go run for something right now. I mean, this is just a dreadful team. And I think one of the things that amuses me a little bit is if they wanted to be buyers, Brian, they would actually have to give the Bulls something to lessen that pick protection that they have, which is just, I didn't think about it when they made that trade at the time, but when you lock up a draft pick for 6 years, like you're handcuffing yourself entirely. So they were part obviously of the three team trade that brought Lauri Markkanen to Cleveland. They got Larry Nance Jr. and they relinquished a 2022 first round draft pick to the Bulls that is lottery protected through 2028. But because you can't trade picks via the stepping in rule in consecutive years and they don't have additional draft picks incoming, the Blazers are pretty much prevented from trading out draft picks because no team can really gauge when that draft pick is going to convey to the Bulls, if at all, which means you can't really give out potential secondary picks in consecutive years. It's like wild that they're in this situation, even if they wanted to be buyers. So for the Blazers to actually want to have the capability of conducting trades, including first-round draft picks, they're going to have to call up the Bulls and go, hey, so what can we give you so you agree that we lessen the protection on this pick, not through 2028, but like through 2023 or four or something along those lines. And the Bulls can go, well, what are you offering? Right. And we'll say, and they will squeeze the ever living hell out of it. It is such a poor situation to find yourself in.
Yeah. No matter what, they should not try to remove the protection this year. Like, they need to keep that pick this year.
Yes.
I don't think Portland should be trading draft picks at this point in general. Like, agreed. They can't right now, but I don't think they should, like, there should not be a situation where they call the Bulls and say, hey, we need to loosen these protections so we can trade a pick elsewhere. Like,
yeah.
Figure out what direction you're going. Figure out, is Dame really staying there for the rest of his career? Are you willing to give him that extension that he wants? Then and only then should you, you know, see how the draft lottery goes this year, especially see if you, who you pick, if you keep that person, then and only then should you consider potentially trading.
Yeah, totally agreed.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
All right, let's go into the Clippers now, who we also brought up. This, I had not considered the Clippers a potential seller at the trade deadline. Like, full disclosure, they did not even come onto my radar.
Right.
But Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report had a story out Wednesday saying they might be in seller mode. Paul George suffered a torn UCL in his right elbow late last month. They originally said he'd be reevaluated in 3 to 4 weeks. But according to Fisher, they are operating under the possibility that George may not return this season. And if George doesn't return, you know, we discussed recently, like, Kawhi Leonard is supposedly ahead of schedule. He might play this year. Sounds like if George doesn't come back, Kawhi also isn't going to come back. So yeah. they much like the Blazers taking this, like, one gap year, they also might be in that mode. And it goes back to what we were saying an episode or two ago with, you know, the balance of buyers and sellers being so tilted toward the buyers. And, you know, again, with, like, Minnesota, New Orleans, Sacramento, teams like that, all potentially hoping to be buyers because, you know, the Blazers and now maybe the Clippers are going to slip out of the play-in race.
Yeah.
That creates some opportunity here. So Jake mentioned specifically Eric Bledsoe, Marcus Morris, and Serge Ibaka as potential trade chips for the Clippers. Ibaka is on a 1-year, $9.7 million deal. Bledsoe is getting 18.1 this year and then 19.4 next year, but only 3.9 of that is guaranteed. And then Marcus Morris is in the second year. I believe it was a 4-year, $64 million contract.
Right.
So what do you make of all of this about the Clippers and, you know, potentially taking a step back this year with the knowledge that they owe their fully unprotected 2022 first round pick to OKC? This is not a case like Portland where it's like, oh, okay, we can tank and get, you know, a top three pick and that might help, you know, turn this thing around with Dame. Like, if the Clippers get a top three pick, it's going to OKC.
Yeah. So I understand that if you become a seller in a primarily a buyer's market, that you can have some advantages. But looking at the Clippers roster, this is very much a poo-poo platter of available players. I mean, sorry, that's not to be harsh, but Serge Ibaka is not that guy anymore. He's a 16-minute player. He looks slow, less athletic. Like, he's Toast is a big word, but he's pretty close to it. Eric Bledsoe, I feel very confident in saying, is toast. Several franchises just do not want any part of him. They could want part of him, like you said, because of the contract. But as a player, are you freaking kidding me? Like, no one is trading for Eric Bledsoe, the player. Marcus Morris is the one guy. Like, he's averaging 16 points, grabbing 5 rebounds. He can play effectively 3 positions. And he's also a guy who isn't necessarily a bad defender. I do think he's overvalued in that sense, or overrated in defensively. But there's something to it. The thing is, Morris, like his twin brother Markieff, they don't really have the best reputation among the league. Like, there are franchises who just aren't interested in getting someone with those type of personalities onto a team because they're hot-headed, they get themselves into shoving matches, there's a lot of headlines off the court. Some teams just do not want the distraction. Like, Marcus Morris right now would be a perfect fit basketball-wise on the Chicago Bulls, but I very much doubt the Bulls would even dare to go in that direction with the chemistry that they have going on the team right now. So you have to wonder, what is the market for those guys? Is that going to be as attractive as we potentially think it is, or is it going to be disappointing? I would definitely try to trade all of them and see if you can get a single hope of a first-round draft pick in return. I don't know who would give that up. But you need to fill up your draft pick asset base, given that you're relinquishing what you're giving up to OKC this year.
Yeah. So Jake mentioned Ibaka. He said OKC is a trade partner to monitor. I think the primary motivation for dumping Ibaka is, A, he's not really playing a ton, and B, if they move him, it's about $40 million in tax savings alone. So they still have $3.3 million available in cash to send in a trade. So that could help sweeten the deal. They could attach a second round pick. Lord knows OKC has cap room and loves accumulating every draft pick under the sun. So that's correct. I think that's probably a scenario that could make sense, but I'm sure OKC is trying to keep its powder dry until the deadline, in case it does need, to use, again, we'll get to the Sixers later, but if, a Tobias Harris needs a third team and they can extract multiple first round picks, I think, that's a deal that will happen February 9th or 10th. Not right now. He mentioned the Raptors as a potential spot for Eric Bledsoe, where they could use a second round pick with Bledsoe to trade for Goran Dragic, who is not giving the Raptors anything right now. And then that would give the Clippers bird rights on Dragic, so they would be able to exceed the salary cap to re-sign him. So that seems to make sense for both sides, honestly.
Yeah, it's fair. And the reason here it makes sense, and you kind of alluded to it previously, is Bledsoe has another year in his deal, but it's only guaranteed for $3.9 million. So you're not, if you're the Raptors, if you're Raptors fans listening to this and you're going, what? I don't want Eric Bledsoe for $19.3 million next year. You're not. You're only on the hook for $3.9 million. But the thing is, Brian, and this is kind of interesting, the Clippers would need to do this trade this year before the deadline. Because if they go into next season, his outgoing salary would be $3.9 million. So it's a deal they have to make now to actually have the big contract number to ship out.
Right. It's similar to what we were talking about with Atlanta previously with Danilo Gallinari, where he's $21.5 million salary next year, but only $5 million of that is guaranteed. So if you're trying to take advantage of the cap savings aspect of his contract, you need to move it now. He's going to have much less trade value next year because then he counts as $5 million as outgoing salary, and then the team needs to decide are we going to just waive him right away, or are we just going to keep him on our books? I don't think anyone wants to pay Eric Bledsoe $19.4 million next year. But if you can acquire him now for in the Raptors case in particular, acquire him now, and he would be more useful than a guy who isn't playing. Get potentially a second round pick or something as well. just to swallow that 3.9 for next year. And then, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe is washed up, but like he could be a potential contributor off the bench in a low minutes role for the Raptors, who are, you know, suddenly surging 7-3 in their last 10. They're eighth in the East right now. Like, I think they might be in buyer mode at the deadline, and not like a big splash play, but, you know, something. I think Dragic is their big chip that they can use.
Yeah.
With no real hesitation, or like, there's no reason to hold on to him. So something like that makes sense to me. But I agree with you that Marcus Morris is the one that's going to hold the most value overall. And you're right, he needs to go to a locker room. He can't go to a team on the rise or a young team. Like, Memphis should not get anywhere near Marcus Morris. Agreed. He needs to go to, like, the team that jumped to mind right away was Miami.
So he can rejoin his twin.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. And like, you know, you got Jimmy Butler there. Like, I don't think Jimmy Butler is going to put up with any BS.
I mean, they already know how to deal with one Morris twin, so why not two?
Right.
At least you get them in the same place. That's fine.
And I mean, the problem with that is the matching salary. You have Jimmy, Bam, and Kyle all at $27 million or above, basically. You would almost have to send out Duncan Robinson. But, I mean, he's only shooting 38.9% overall, 35.7% from three this year. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder, especially with Tyler Hero's breakout, I wonder if they are having a little bit of buyer's remorse on him, and maybe this is a way to get out of that contract.
I mean, look, he had 2 years where he proved himself, and so far it's 38 games of him struggling. And we have seen players in the past struggle after they were given a big contract because they felt a lot of pressure. And then after that initial year, they bounce back because they kind of go, okay, I'm over it. I'm back into the swing of things. So I am not necessarily as out on Duncan Robinson at all. And if you give him up for Marcus Morris, you would get a replacement three-point shooter because Marcus can absolutely hit the three, but you won't get a three-point shooter of the same caliber who can run around screens, who can like bend defenses the way that Duncan Robinson can. There are nuances to being a good three-point shooter. It's not just catch and shoot. It's not just standing still and spotting up. It's moving off the ball, identifying where you can really curl off certain screens and all those things. And Duncan Robinson is someone you can pretty much plug and play into any system because he has that ability to move off the basketball. And I wonder if he was traded, he would just bounce back immediately for another team. And that would mean you would have buyer's remorse on the trade, not the signing.
Yeah, I'm not saying they should do it straight up, to be clear. Like, I think Duncan Robinson still has more value than Marcus Morris. But, I mean, the other complicating factor is that the Clippers owe basically their entire draft future to OKC still from the Paul George trade. So they owe unprotected 2022, 24, and 2026 first-round picks to OKC. They also owe 2023 and 2025 pick swaps. So the earliest they could make – yeah, they can only trade – they could do a 2027 pick swap, or they could do an unprotected 2028 first in the deal. Otherwise, they do have most of their second round picks. So maybe you sweeten it with that, or maybe you include Keon Johnson or Brandon Boston, one of their other young guys as well. Right. That was just the first team to come to mind. I'm not saying it's the right answer, but like if
Heat culture, right? It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's they the would ideology.
They would be just a physically nasty, annoying as F team to play, especially if you're looking ahead to the playoffs. Like, Duncan agreed. Like, he very well could bounce back, and he's had some games where he the other night he knocked down 8 of 16 threes, scored 27 points. Like, I'm not saying he couldn't turn it around, but he is not a plus defender. He's never going to be one. He's already 27, turning 28 in April, so it's not like Tyler Hero where you're like, oh, well, he had a down year, but he's still 22, so we can project a ton of upside here. Like,
Right.
Duncan Robinson probably is who he is at this point. So yes. If they're worried about him being targeted defensively in the playoffs, especially if they're playing him and Hero together, like a lineup with Lowry, Hero, Jimmy, Marcus Morris, and Bam Adebayo just seems like a switchable nightmare.
Oh, it would be. And look, if we're being fair, Max Strus has come on this year. He's a great shooter. Gabe Vincent has also come on and proven to himself capable of playing more minutes and being more of a reliable shooter and offensive contributor. So maybe this is the year you're open to maybe even losing out on a trade in terms of talent in Duncan Robinson, where you just go, okay, we're relinquishing some value in Duncan's very fluid three-point motion, but we're bringing in a guy who defensively will be an uptick, and then we'll just have to replace Duncan shooting via Strus and Vincent and Hero in particular. So maybe that is the approach. I would probably question it until I see it on the floor and whether it's working, but that's also because I have a lot of skepticism around the Morai twins.
Sure.
No,
that's completely fair. I'm not saying this, like, the Heat should definitely do it. It's just they were the first team to come to mind, and that's really the easiest way. You know, otherwise it would have to be like, no, I mean, Pete, you would have to include a Hero, basically, or do like a 3-for-1 or a 4-for-1. Like,
yeah.
PJ Tucker and Oladipo and Deadman, and like, yeah, maybe that gets you in the ballpark. I think you still might need to include it. Salary wise, Robinson for Morris works straight up. Or, you know, again, you can throw Keon Johnson in there. I think it would still work.
So but would it work for the Clippers? So let's play this out, because it has to work for both sides. So the Clippers going into next year will then trot out PG, Kawhi, Duncan Robinson, and Luke Kennard. Is there... there's some overlap in Kennard and Duncan, I think, to some extent.
Well, I mean, but Kennard's only started 10 games this year, though, so they might just keep him... Like, they would probably keep starting Reggie Jackson as their point guard. And then Robinson, Kawhi, Paul George, and then Zubac as their center, figure it out, whoever.
Yeah, and Kennard, to his credit, can also play pick and roll basketball, which Duncan Robinson can't. So you can have them on the floor at the same time. Defensively, those two would be a nightmare, but offensively, that could be a lot of efficient shooting, especially if you have PG and Kawhi on the court at the same time. So yeah, it would work, but I wonder if that's the approach that they want to go with the Clippers, because it's a lot of money that you're allocating to Kennard and Robinson. Would you rather try to do something else and get more of a glue guy in there to bridge between Kawhi and PG? I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, they could always potentially look to flip Kennard either.
Yeah.
If they brought in Robinson, they'd probably keep both this year, especially with PG and Kawhi out. But like in the summer, you know, Kennard's only 14.4 million next year, 15.4 the year after, and he's a 15.4 club option. He's still pretty young, all things considered. Like, I think he would have positive trade value if they did look to flip him at some point.
Yeah, I agree. That first year with the Clippers was not a fair representation of who he was.
Right. But now, especially with Kawhi and PG out, like, he's going to have more opportunity to pile up stats, and you know, for teams that aren't necessarily paying like super close attention to him, if you just like, yeah, you probably look at the box score last year and you're like, oh, what happened there from Detroit? You know, your production basically got cut in half. But
yeah,
no, since joining the Clippers, he's shooting 44.4% from 3-point range. It's like teams are always going to value that type of shooting. Like if you're shooting that well, especially on a, you know, sub $15 million contract, you're going to be desired around the league.
And he's a low turnover guy. I think there's a lot to like with Luke Kennard. Maybe he's a piece. If they're a seller, maybe they're looking at him at this trade deadline and going, okay, there are a lot of teams out there who could use a secure ball handler who is currently an elite three-point shooter. Maybe someone is willing to give him a first-round draft pick for that.
Yeah. I think he should be on the table especially if they were able to bring in some type of replacement for him.
Agreed.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Mort. Your favorite time of year, of month, of week, of day. The latest on the Ben Simmons front.
Yay. Yay.
You know what?
Harrison Barnes had a very good game last night.
Oh, did he? That's good. Yeah. Well, Russell Westbrook did that, I'll tell you that much.
It was the same game.
I know. Speaking of Russell Westbrook, he is someone who the Sixers are not going to trade Ben Simmons for. Yeah. But we got a bunch coming out this week about Ben Simmons. And the biggest takeaway is that it might not only be a Ben Simmons trade. Wendy and Mark Spears were the first to report this on the Hoop Collective podcast, that the Sixers are trying to attach Tobias Harris potentially in a Ben Simmons trade. Sam Amick of The Athletic and then Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report have since reported that as well. Apparently, Wendy and Spears were saying, you know, like Atlanta had expressed interest in Ben Simmons, and then Morey tried to attach Tobias, and Atlanta was like, on second thought, no, thank you. We're good. And I think, you know, the complicating factor is, of course, just the enormous amount of salary that both guys are making, not only this year, but for the next few years. So yes. Tobias is at basically $36 million this year. Ben Simmons is at $33 million. Next year, Tobias is at $37.6 million. Ben Simmons at $35.4 million. The following year, Tobias is at 39.3, Ben Simmons is at 37.9, and then Tobias becomes a free agent 24-25, Ben Simmons becomes a free agent 25-26. So it's very hard to find any teams that can cobble together enough salary this year to acquire both Tobias and Ben Simmons. I think it would be a three-team deal where Ben goes to one team and Tobias goes to the other. But what do you make, Mort, of just in general the idea of the Sixers trying to offload Tobias in a Ben Simmons deal?
Oh, so many thoughts. First, being for the Hawks, my first thought was that is not the consolidation trades that we were talking about. No. We're talking of bringing in Jaylen Brown and Karl-Anthony Towns, not Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris. Secondarily, Brian, you and I have – I want to pat ourselves a little bit on the shoulder here for this. Because you and I, over the past couple of years, have consistently brought up how you should not torpedo your own guy's trade value by necessarily attaching a bad contract. So if you have a guy who is an attractive trade piece, and look, honestly, I don't know if Ben Simmons is an attractive trade piece anymore, because there's some speculation to me that says that if he was, he'd be gone by now. But I mean, okay, but there are varying degrees of it. Like, you can't, like, what Daryl Morey is asking for is so much more than what he is worth. So, but all right. So let's just say Ben Simmons is an attractive trade piece. Why would you then want to relinquish the value that you can get back by attaching a contract? And I like Tobias Harris, by the way. I think you overestimate who he is as a player. I think a lot of people do. I think people are so hooked up on that contract and ignoring that he's a really good basketball player. Yeah, he's having a down year this year, but it is what it is. But why would you want to torpedo your own guy's trade value by attaching a bad contract? Why would you want to do that? Because if your whole mission is, I want to trade this guy so I can get a lot better, I want to get the best trade package that I can even get. And then you go, oh, but I'm also going to attach a really bad contract, which is then going to make the team that I'm trading with say, well, then we're going to give you less. So if you want four first-round draft picks, but you also want me to take your bad contracts off your hands, well, you know what? You're going to have to pay me for that. So we'll retract a first-round draft pick or two even, because why should we? So This just doesn't make sense to me. What is he trying to do here? So you explain that to me, because apparently I'm confused.
Yeah, so I think the Sixers' approach is twofold. One, if they aren't going to get the like all-star caliber player, the Dame, the Beal, the Levine, the Jaylen Brown that they want, they're going to they'll set their asking price lower, but they also want to get off of this Tobias contract. Cause I agree with you. Like I wrote a piece at Forbes earlier this month where I said, Tobias Harris is not a bad player. He's having a down year. I think in large part because they don't have a real point guard on the roster. I think if they had a real table setter that he would be better. He's playing in a role where he's like a little bit out of his comfort zone. And, you know, we saw last year, he was a fringe all-star. Like he can play at that level. The problem is that the Sixers gave him a near max contract and he was never worth that amount of money. He was never going to live up to that deal. So I don't blame Morey for wanting to get off of that contract. Okay. But other teams can also see that he's wildly overpaid. Like he's in the D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins tier where like these guys should be making half as much money and they have a lot more trade value, but because they're making max deals, like you're just your ceiling is somewhat constrained because you have these contracts on your books. Right. And like, you know, the Warriors to their credit have made the best of Wiggins this year by putting him in a role that he is much better suited for. And I think Baxter Holmes had a piece about that recently. But you know, the Sixers, because of their current circumstances, cannot. I think the other point is, you know, based on just the available names that we know at the deadline, Harrison Barnes, Jeremy Grant, John Collins, Domas Sabonis, most of those guys play the four, where Tobias Harris plays as well. So, you know, Shams was the first one to report this on Monday, I want to say, that he was saying the Hawks are emerging as a potential landing spot for Simmons. And Mark Stein of Substack reported that last week as well. And then shockingly, Shams' phrasing was sloppy here. So I don't know if this is like informed reporting or if this is just like speculation. But he says, in scanning the Hawks roster, it's obvious that John Collins and Cam Reddish are among the players who could acquiesce a package for Simmons. And he noted Collins has increasingly grown frustrated over his role in Atlanta, which we'll talk about in a bit. So if the Sixers, like when that report came out, I was like, oh, like John Collins and Joel Embiid together are actually a pretty interesting fit. But then what do you do about Tobias? Because you cannot, like, if you slide him to the three, it's just not going to work.
Agreed.
So I think that's the other part of this. It's like, if we are going to acquire John Collins, Domas Sabonis, Harrison Barnes, Jeremy Grant, like, we got to send Tobias Harris elsewhere because, like, we're just going to be sinking $100 million into a front court that's not going to work. We already tried that once.
Trading for John Collins when you have Joel Embiid is just going to result in another front court that isn't going to work. And I'm really sorry that I'm pissing against the wind here because I know NBA Twitter is all about, oh my God, Collins Embiid. If John Collins is not satisfied with the number of shots that he's getting in Atlanta, what the hell makes you think that he'll be satisfied playing alongside Joel Embiid, who is still going to be the best player on the team, who is going to be taking the vast majority of inside touches, who is going to be the primary scorer at a position that Collins himself plays very frequently. I don't know why the NBA Twitter hive mind have gone all in on Collins as this next big piece, who's like the perfect fit alongside everyone. I think it's BS. Like he is a guy who can space the floor. This is perfectly a reasonable argument. But he's not someone who goes out there and primarily shoots the three. Like, he's not a stretch four. he's a guy who also has to attack the rim off of dribble drives. He has to, you know, catch lobs. He has to score on the inside as well. Like, if this was a Lauri Markkanen type, okay, sure. You could make the argument that's going to make sense. You have Embiid on the inside. You have Lauri on the outside. But turning John Collins into what I will presume will be mostly a spot-up three-point shooter and mid-range shooter doesn't really fly with the kind of player that he is. And I am very, very uncertain as to why we are building him up to being something that he's not, because that is not fair to him. Mm-hmm. He is a pick-and-roll big. And if you have a pick-and-roll big, he is not going to like having a back-to-the-basket center where his running patterns are going to be established. We saw that even dating back all the way back to Los Angeles with Dwight and Pau Gasol. It doesn't work out that way because there's just not a lot of spacing there in the first place to make it work. And for the Sixers, that still is true. Even if you have Seth Curry, you also have Tyrese Maxey. And I love Maxey, but he's not a knockdown three-point shooter yet. So where's that spacing going to come from? It's not there. Right. So I'm not in love with the Collins Embiid idea, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I will say this. John Collins is averaging 12 shot attempts per game. Tobias Harris is averaging 15.3 shot attempts per game. So John Collins could walk into 3.3 more shot attempts per game in Philly.
I hope that will
satisfy him.
That is great analysis, like at the top of the cream right there. Yep, yep.
Thank you.
Way to dig deep. It took hours
of research to figure that out. Yeah.
Am I crazy for saying what I just said?
I hear your concerns. And I think, again, this comes down to what else the Sixers could get in this deal. Because I still think they need, like, I love Tyrese Maxey. I think the kid is going to turn into something very special. He is not a real point guard. They're forcing him into this role because they don't have any better options. But, like, they need someone else who can be an actual playmaker. And I think if they had that, it would help Tobias Harris if they don't move him. Or if they, you know, trade Ben and Tobias together and get John Collins back. Like, they still need that other piece to set the table for John Collins. I do think there's some appeal to Collins as a potential backup five in small ball roles.
Yeah.
And I will say Embiid, his floor vision has gotten significantly better in recent years. Right now, he's averaging a career high 4.3 assists per game, and he's a career low 3.0 turnovers per game.
Yeah.
I've noticed this a lot with Matisse in particular lately. Like, Matisse has been camping out in the dunker spot and cutting a lot. And, like, when Embiid's getting double teamed and he sees Matisse cutting to the basket, like, he's hitting those passes. So I think there could be some high-low chemistry with Joel and John Collins. But, I mean, I agree. Like, part of me is still scarred from the Al Horford experiment. And I know John Collins and Al Horford are two entirely different types of players. John Collins is so much more athletic than, you know, the corpse of Al Horford is. Like, it's not really equivalent, but at the same time, I mean, you know, you have been railing against, like, quote unquote, the traditional power forward for a while now. And it would make me nervous to be like, oh yeah, that's the big grab that they get from this Ben Simmons trade is a traditional power forward.
Right. And that's the issue I have, because here's the thing. 19.7% of John Collins' offense is unassisted. That means that he is relying on 80.3% of his offense being assisted. You don't do that when you have a dribble. When you're capable of breaking down defenses, getting into the teeth of the defense, which it has become an increasing requirement for power forwards in today's league. That's why we're seeing Tobias Harris play the four in Philly in the first place. It's why we're seeing Harrison Barnes play the four in Sacramento. These guys were small forwards. Hell, Jeremy Grant in Detroit as well started out his career as a small forward. Now he's a four. Those guys can put the ball on the floor and get to certain spots off their own dribble. If John Collins had developed that, I would be all in. It's the fact that he doesn't have a good dribble. It's the fact he's not much of a playmaker. He's averaging 2 assists per game, so it's not as if he is some sort of detriment on that end, but it's not something he can go to reliably. And defensively, while he's gotten better, he's not good. So what we're looking at is one of those traditional power forwards where I think this could go really, really badly. The reason I have spoken him up this year in Atlanta is because I wanted them to lean into his strengths. And I would say, regardless of where he goes, even if it's Philly, I would want John Collins to become a 24, 25-point scorer because his primary skill set, his biggest strength, is that he is an effective scorer. He has shown throughout the course of his career, he can put up a ton of points and efficiently. So why not lean into that? Why not, if you're a team like Atlanta, trade off everything else and just say, look, we're all in on this Trey John Collins thing. Trey's going to lock in for like 28 points a game, but you know what? John Collins is not going to be far behind because we are going to give him so many opportunities to become this 24, 25-point scorer. That is his skill. If he comes to Philly, he is going to fall back in that rotation in terms of Embiid. He's not going to be, you know, as effective as Embiid. He's not going to be as prolific a scorer. And you just can't, in my opinion, have two guys who are in the front court averaging 27 points per game, for example. Like, that's not going to fly in today's league because you're going to need guard production. Basically, what I'm saying is if you're trading Collins, you're not reaping the entire benefits. You are going to get a version of him who is consistently going to be a little bit minimalized to what he should be.
Yeah. So this goes back to the 140 million or potentially like $250 million question if Tobias Harris is involved now. If the best package is on the table at the trade deadline, let's say Dame is not being traded this year. It's pretty clear,
right?
Especially with the surgery. There's no Jaylen Brown does not seem like he's being traded this year. And if he is, I don't think Boston is trading him to Philly.
No, so, 29 points over his past 12 games and 8.5 rebounds. I'm pretty sure that he's not going to get moved.
Right. And Shams reported on Monday, like the Celtics don't want to trade. They want to build around Tatum and Brown. They don't want to trade these guys right now.
As they should.
So let's say the best offers at the deadline are, you know, some combination of the power forwards we already discussed, and that would involve trading Tobias Harris as well and taking, you know, you get the benefit of getting off of that contract, but you're not going to get positive value for him. Like, I still think the best possible straight up trade for Tobias Harris is John Wall.
Which you wouldn't be interested in, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, it would, like, if it's Ben Simmons and Tobias going out and it's John Wall, John Collins, Cam Reddish coming back in, maybe, but like that still just feels like
you get more salary flexibility at least because Wall is up after next year.
Next year.
Yeah.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But, I mean, this is the fundamental question. Like, do they have to trade Ben Simmons by the deadline? Or if they are underwhelmed by the packages, are they willing to wait the entire year and go to the draft and go to free agency and say, like, we weren't bluffing. We told you this is a four-year thing, and we are willing to wait all 4 years.
So it's a really good question. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here for being a team that could be interested in Ben Simmons, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I would have questions about him having not played a full year.
Sure.
I would have questions about where he is physically, his conditioning, given everything that's come out about mental health. And again, that shouldn't play a part, but it does. Let's just be honest. When teams are trading for players or drafting players, a psychological profile is a must-have for any team.
Yeah.
And if teams are concerned about Ben Simmons's mental state, that's going to affect his trade value as well. And that's not me commenting on his, like, I'm a big proponent of furthering mental health. You know that. I mean,
right,
I struggled
right.
with depressions myself. So that's not in any way in anything negative towards Ben. I'm just saying that's how business is conducted in the NBA. So that's a lot of question marks that suddenly pop up for a potential suitor, like physicality or just physical shape, conditioning,
right.
readiness, mental approach, readiness, mental readiness. And then comes the big ass question here, Brian. While you've been away for the game for a full year, have you developed a jump shot?
Right. Like, what have you been doing? Are you just hanging out with your new fiance?
Right. What have you been working on to improve? Because let's just get back to basics here. As you and I have said repeatedly over the past 6-7 months now, at least, teams trading for Ben Simmons would be trading for him with the mindset of, yeah, you are going to be unlocked with us.
Right.
If teams are not trading for Ben Simmons to remain the same version of himself, teams are trading for Ben Simmons with the idea that they can unlock more of him. So having not seen him for over a full year, the last time they saw him, he was blowing layups, or not even blowing, like passing up layups in Atlanta in the playoffs. That is a problem. I genuinely think that teams would be super worried going into such a situation because there are going to be 4 years left on his contract. At what is that? Let me just look that up. Like, that is
30+ million per year.
30, yeah. So 30 starting here this year, after the conclusion of this year, it's going to be 35.5 million, then 38 million, then 40.5 million. All right, so that's 3 years and not four. My mistake.
Yep.
But still, oh my God, that is such a monumental financial commitment with all those question marks underneath. How do you, as an NBA organization trying to trade Ben, lessen those concerns for potential suitors?
Yeah, I mean, they're all fair questions. And I will say about your point on the mental health stuff in particular, Sam Amick brought that up on Wednesday. So this is not just you know, saying that this is, like, his source reporting saying, you know, after the blown layup heard around the world, he said the years long pattern of Simmons struggling with confidence issues on the floor is seen by some interested teams as a separate matter from the mental health struggles that he has cited as his reason for staying off of it. But he also said in terms of Simmons' eventual availability with a new team, the message has been sent that he would be ready to play after a few weeks of intensified conditioning and court action. So that should hopefully ease those concerns this season. It does raise some questions overall about, you know, that because Woj reported Wednesday that Rich Paul met with Daryl Morey and Elton Brand and that mm-hmm. the stalemate continues. They made no progress. Rich Paul says that, you know, Ben still has the mental health issues that's precluding him from playing, which
right.
seems to conflict with Amick's messaging that he'd be ready to play within a few weeks. So
yeah. So also, let me just get this straight. So basically, the idea here is that yes, if you trade for Ben Simmons, he's going to play within a few weeks because he'll spend those weeks getting his mind ready. As someone who is in his now third year of going to a psychologist, that's not how the mind works.
Right.
I can't go out and say, well, in 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to be fit as a fiddle. That's not how it works. The mind is very dynamic. So this whole situation, I feel confident in saying this because I don't want to overstep my bounds. But here's the thing. If it turns out that the mental health argument has been used as a leverage point mm-hmm. from Clutch and Ben Simmons, I, as someone who has struggled with mental health, is going to be absolutely pissed. Because in no way, shape, or form should mental health be used as a false leverage. And that's not me saying that it is false, but I agree with you. The wording of that sounds extremely dumb. Like, oh, I'm struggling with my mental health issues, but I'm going to be okay in a couple weeks if I get traded.
Right.
That's not how it works. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't want to put all my business out there, but I've gone through a very rough life. So have several of my family members. I know what mental health mental instability looks like. My own mother has a very severe mental condition. I understand what these things are, and I would be very, very, very disappointed if this is somehow just used as a leverage point or a negotiation tactic, and I would really go in on that if that came to fruition.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. And I don't want to like say it definitively one way or the other. I'm just pointing out the seeming conflict there.
Yeah.
In that
That's a big ass conflict. That is a big, big conflict that I have very big issues with if something turns out to be not true.
Right. But I mean, beside the point, you know, I think from the Sixers' perspective, they have, to their credit, they have been very consistent with their messaging all year. And it's been coming from not only Maury in the front office, but like from everyone that I've talked to there. I know I've talked with some people privately, like other Sixers folks, and like they're hearing the same thing. Like the Sixers say that Maury is on board with this, that Doc is on board with this, that ownership's on board with this, and that Embiid is on board with this too, that they are willing to let this thing go past the deadline.
Embiid is so out on this. Embiid is so out on. I mean, we saw that going into the season.
Oh yeah, he never wants to play with Ben again.
Yeah,
yeah. But Jake has a report today again that you know they do not view holding on to him as punting on the season of Embiid's prime. For better or worse, they are still optimistic that he may even be willing to return if he, you know, February 11th comes around, he's still a Sixer. They think he might actually suit up at that point. Other people connected to Simmons say he's never playing for the Sixers again. So like he really might hold out for the full year, but it just comes down to the fundamental question of like, do you have to trade him now for a package that you don't consider to be a major upgrade or a package, you know, a power forward package that forces you to dump Tobias Harris elsewhere? Or like, I do wonder, you know, we've heard some chatter about a James Harden, Ben Simmons sign and trade this summer. And like, I wonder, given Harden's relationship with Maury and like longstanding history with Maury, I wonder if there has been some back channeled interest in that regard signaled to Maury that he would be like open to, if things go poorly for the Nets and like, you know, Kyrie misses half the playoffs because he's an idiot. And the Nets get knocked out in the second round or something, like, would Harden be willing to do a sign and trade? Because I think honestly, like that might be the most logical trade for both sides.
Yeah.
Like if Ben Simmons goes to Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie, he can just hide offensively. He could be that table setter. You know, he and Kyrie can take turns pretending to pass to teammates. But like I think defensively he'd be incredible there, and they wouldn't have to rely on him as a primary offensive option. And, you know, Harden and Embiid, I had concerns last year when this first came up, but like, if he's on a new contract, you know, you don't acquire him now because he can leave in 3 months. But if you already have him on a new deal, then it's like, all right, well, you got rid of the risk of him leaving at least. So I wonder if that is the card, like the ace up Maury's sleeve that he thinks. You know, I think like the Dame stuff, I think, has always been like they hope that it's going to happen, but it just doesn't really seem realistic. Same with Bradley Beal. Like, I wonder if the Harden stuff is actually realistic.
But given that we are speculating in the media that Ben is not vaccinated.
Right.
That would mean that you only have KD available.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I mean, who knows? By the time, you know, next October.
But could you imagine, though? Could you imagine how pissed KD would be?
Oh, it'd be like, so funny. To be clear, the only way this happens is if Harden says, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I want to go to Philly. But if not, I'm just going to go elsewhere. Like, he would have to force a sign and trade to Philly in particular. But I mean, there was a report from Stephen Bondi yesterday that says, like, under the current policy in New York, all they have to do is pay a $5,000 fine for him to play in home games.
I saw that. Was that real or not? I wasn't sure that that was. Is that true?
Because if so,
why haven't? I mean, look, the Nets have lost all credibility as is.
Right.
Like, they were just, yeah. So they could basically just have paid that for the past couple of weeks. Or, well, okay, after he returned from COVID, but
yeah,
they could have paid that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's an option. I mean, I don't know if they're just like not trying to force the issue until the playoffs, but
right.
I think the overall point is we don't know what the policy is going to be in July or October. So like things could be totally different by then. Or if that is the holdup, like if all you have to do is get one freaking shot, just go take your one shot. It'll be the one shot you take for the next 5 years, Ben Simmons. Just go. Go get the goddamn vaccine and then get the hell out of Philly and never come back.
This weird ass season has really like been eye opening just in terms of like players, you know, showing their personality in the sense of where they draw the line. Yeah. And some of it has just been eye opening to just how stupid it's been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that about like, people in general. I wouldn't just limit.
Oh
to
no,
NBA
yeah, for
players,
sure.
But
we're doing a pod. We're doing a podcast about the NBA. That's why I'm referencing. I'm absolutely agreeing with you. Like hell, even some of my friends are or former friends now. Like where you really opened up your eyes for certain some things. But again, these are the issues that you now have to take into account, right?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're
of course.
A team trading for players. Like now that's beginning to be one of your first questions. Like instead of, hey, how's your guy's knee? It's like, hey, is your guy vaccinated?
Right. You're right though. I mean, it's absolutely like that, especially in a place that has a policy that limits whether you can play or not. You have to ask that question.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Which is, again, it's like ridiculous. Just go get the goddamn shot. It's not an issue.
It would be hilarious. You're right. It would be so hilarious if it turned out that Ben was unvaccinated. He made it to Brooklyn and he just took everything Kyrie said and ate it up. And they both went on no, we don't want to get vaccinated. And KD was just sitting there steaming, moving back and forth like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here.
KD would force a trade back to Golden State. He'd be like,
right,
trade me for Wiggins straight up. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Have fun with this.
Yeah. Oh my. But you're right. I mean, and if we're being honest about a potential James Harden fit in Philadelphia, that would be the solution also to Tyrese Maxey because that would free up Maxey to be more of like the offensive minded scorer instead of the guy who sets up everything. Like Harden to me is the big solution in Philly. Because he's a big guard, he's a who is more or less a point guard. Like he's a table setter. Whether you slot him at the one or two, it doesn't matter. He's a table setter. So you have other perimeter players feeding off of him. Like Seth Curry would get so many open shots next to James Harden as well.
Yeah,
like he's the piece. And I say that fully recognizing that he's not the same player that he used to be, which might even benefit him. Or benefit the Sixers, because then he wouldn't be this shut hungry dude who takes up like 40% of the offense. Like he's a little bit more scaled back now, more play initiative attentive, and that means more shots for Embiid, the ball moves. You're right. I think James Harden, even more so than Dame or Beal or all of that, I think he's he's the guy. But you're also right in the sense that he needs to demand out. Like this is not, you know, Morey calling up Sean Marks and going, hey, down for a trade? Like, no, that answer is going to be no pretty consistently.
Right. I mean, he can be a free agent this summer. So I think that would, it's not going to happen until the summer. The Nets are going to try this group for better or worse this season. But yeah, I there's just been enough smoke around this that I wonder if there is already been some messaging between the Sixers and Harden's camp, which of course is illegal and no one could ever do that. So that's a total speculation on my part. But
oh man, yeah, it would be one of the worst penalties you could ever get in the form of a second round draft pick. Right.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, let's wrap up since we brought up John Collins. We actually discussed him a couple episodes ago. As someone, yeah, you're really pounding this drum as someone who the Hawks are just not taking advantage of, especially after they signed him to that 5-year, $125 million contract this past offseason. And guess what? John Collins agrees with you. This is Sean said he has grown increasingly frustrated over his role in Atlanta. He has challenged the Hawks locker room on multiple occasions to play team basketball and commit to one another this season. Oftentimes, he has felt his voice go unheard, which is, I feel like we heard this exact same story last January as well. I feel like Chris Kirshner, yes, of The Athletic had a piece about, like, I want to say he challenged Trae Young in a film session, you know, about like Trae Young being a little too selfish with the ball. And the vibes are just not good in Atlanta right now. Right. They've lost three straight. They're 17-23, three games back of the Celtics for that 10th spot in the East. And I want to give Collins credit here because that report came out Monday, and then he spoke with Chris Kirshner of The Athletic on Tuesday. He had a like an extended conversation about some of his frustration, and he didn't deny it. But he also did say he wants to be in Atlanta long term. Like, he's not, he hasn't requested a trade or anything like that. But he's like, yeah, man, like we're losing. It sucks. And I'm pissed. And it's exposed. Like, we felt really good last season going on that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, now this season has been a wake up call for all of us. And it's like exposed some things that got papered over last year. Yeah. So what do you make of all of this, Mort, and especially, you know, with the trade deadline now less than a month away? And we talked an episode or two ago about, you know, like Travis Schlenk is saying we might need to make some big changes here.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I like you, I commend Collins for being open about it. And I even think he was last year, too. If memory serves, after that piece, he had an interview basically stating the same thing, which actually means a lot. Having a player say certain things and not back away from it publicly, mm-hmm, and actually come out and say, yeah, I said that and here's the context to it. Commendable, superbly, yep, commendable. I love that because that means that you are standing by your word, and that is actually a leadership quality. I know that some people on Twitter were also like, oh, he really shouldn't be saying stuff. Yeah, if you can back it up afterwards and you say, yeah, I mean this. I truly, genuinely believe what I'm saying, and this is how my perspective is. Kudos. Right. And yeah, I've been banging that drum for a while, and I more or less talked about it about 30 minutes ago in the way that I see it. But yeah, I when you look at Bogdan Bogdanović, you look at Kevin Huerter, I think one of those two guys should probably be on their way. Because I understand they don't play the same position as Collins, but that's besides the point. They're shot takers, and I think it's about time you try to pivot some of those shots towards Collins. And I understand he's talking about team, but a part of placing yourself in the best possible situation as a team is also getting the right shots to the right players. As I said 30 minutes ago, this guy is superbly efficient. Like, this, mm-hmm, is one of the most efficient scorers in the game of basketball. Why not give him more shots? even if his efficiency goes from elite to very much above average, it's still good if you can attach more points to it, because if he becomes someone who commands a double team more often than not, then you have two guys on the floor who could command that at any given point, opening up the floor to everyone else. If we set aside our whole Jaylen Brown, Karl-Anthony Towns thing, let's set that aside. The trio that I, the quartets that I want moving forward is Trey, John Collins, Cameron Reddish, and DeAndre Hunter. And yeah, I would add in Onyeka Okongwu to that, but he hasn't played a whole lot. I love what he's done so far, so I could add him in moving forward. But those are the four that I would really love to see, because you can get an offense there where everyone is involved. Hell, you know what? Let's say a starting lineup. Let's throw Onyeka in there.
Yeah.
Then you'll have a very solid offensive-defensive balance. You would have scoring at every single position, but you would still have your clear-cut number two guys in Trey and Collins. And I think that would work. But if you're throwing in Bogdan Bogdanović, you're throwing in Kevin Huerter, you're throwing in Danilo Gallinari, you're throwing in, to some extent as well, Clint Capella, it's a lot of shots, Brian. It's a lot of mouths to feed. And eventually, they're going to be not one or two or three. There are going to be several guys who are like, what are we doing here? Because winning cures all. So if you're not winning, those problems are only going to be underlined thoroughly.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to read this entire thing from Collins, but I encourage anyone who's interested in this stuff to read the Kirshner interview. Cause you know, he was asking like, how do you feel about, you know, he's saying like, you complain that they don't call play for you. How do you feel about that? He's like, I don't love that. I understand my value, my role of the team. I feel like I've embraced it and not complained. I've done what I feel like I needed to do, be a professional on this team. It's the coach's decision, organization's decision. He said, there are things I can't control. I'm not trying to say anything about. I just don't like to be out there running around sometimes. He said, I'm not sitting here complaining and saying I need more touches of the ball, or I need to score more points or need more shots. All I've said specifically, if there's a way that I feel like is beneficial for everybody and not just myself, is for us to be used in the correct way. So
yeah,
between this and
well said. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think he really came across well in this interview. It really didn't sound like guys just, oh, I need 25 shots a game, I'd be paying this much money. It's like, no, man, like just figure out how to use me best. Like, please, like, I feel like I'm being underutilized, which he is. And like, let's fix that. But I think you're right that, you know, Reddish and Hunter were hurt for a lot of that playoff run last year. And that thinned out the Hawks rotation so that guys like Bogdanović and Gallinari took on bigger roles. And now that those guys have come back, like obviously COVID threw everything for a loop for a month. But like the Hawks are mostly healthy again now. And I saw Kirshner tweeted this out. It was an interview that Gallo did, I think, with Sky Sport, where he said, like, yeah, we don't really have clearly defined roles or a clear hierarchy on this team. And that's been one of the biggest challenges this year. Like, we had that last year. We had that during the playoffs when some of the young guys were hurt. But now we just have so many guys deserving of touches that, like, obviously Trey is, you know, number one on the team in terms of usage, in terms of shots. But after that, it's like, we don't really know who's the number two option on any given night. So I think that goes back to why we were saying it's time for them to make a consolidation deal. Like,
yes,
that would help thin out the rotation a bit and put people in more clearly defined roles. And then again, if they like, going back to what we said about Bledsoe, like this is the time to trade Danilo Gallinari. Like you're going to get the cap savings aspect now that you're not going to 5 months from now. What would you be willing to move Collins for? Like, obviously for a Jaylen Brown type, sure. But like, would you be willing to move him in a package for Ben Simmons if you're the Hawks?
Oh, see, I don't like that whole deal. I know that it's John Collins and Cameron Reddish reported for Ben.
Well, that's again Shams's phrasing, so make of it
what you will. Brian, I would hate giving up just Reddish for Ben. I mean, So yeah. No, I don't like that idea. I really don't. And I understand that that comes off ridiculous, but no, I don't think he is what the Hawks need. If they're desperate also to figure out who their second option is, bringing Ben in is not going to help the matter. I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's the, to me, it's the contractual value that's attached to Ben that's also going to make life miserable for the Hawks here. You're going to limit just what you can bring in otherwise. And I think this is, has to be a very perimeter-oriented offense with Trey. I mean, you just can't have guys there who can't space the floor. And to John Collins' credit, he's hitting like 44% of his threes this year. Right. So you have those components. What I am more so wondering about is, you just said that they don't know how, like, they can't identify who is going to be their second option. That is concerning to me because that option is staring you right in the face to the point mm-hmm. where it's absolutely like you would have to be oblivious not to see it. How can you not, especially even if we take into account, you know, what Collins, or even if we set aside what Collins can do offensively off his skill set, you just gave him a $125 million contract. Why would you not have him live up to that contract by putting him into the best position to succeed?
Yeah.
And lean into his skill set.
I think part of it is, again, like the young guy, Reddish and Hunter coming back this year really complicated things mm-hmm. because those guys are also not, they're not in a contract year, but they're in a
right.
soon to be extension year. Like this is the last year they have to prove what they can do before they become extension eligible. So I think the Hawks might be funneling more stuff through them to figure out what they have in those guys. And, you know, Fisher has reported there have been persistent rumblings about the Hawks being willing to move Cam Reddish for a first round pick as well. You know, he also said they appear fluid in their asking price for Reddish. Some teams have said they want the first round pick. Other teams say they want either a veteran wing on a rotation contract or veteran rotation wing on a value contract or a younger first round caliber player whose rookie contract has more years remaining than Reddish's. So it sounds like they are willing to move Cam Reddish more than DeAndre Hunter. And again, maybe like if you package Reddish with Gallo, maybe that thins things out a little bit, but yeah, it's they're in such a tough spot because, you know, if you lose the cap value from Gallo after mm-hmm. this trade deadline, Reddish and Hunter become eligible for extensions this summer. Like now really might be the time to cash in. If you're, you know, nervous about giving Reddish or Hunter the extension, like now is the time to cash in rather than 5 months from now when it's like, oh, they're eligible for an extension. You're trying to trade them. What's up, guys?
Unless, of course, you want Hunter as your starting four moving forward, in which case you can trade Collins.
Right.
Brian, I might have an idea.
Oh, okay.
We've consistently brought up Harrison Barnes and Jeremy Grant as Chicago solutions.
Yeah.
John Collins.
Can they get to the money they need? Because he's a little bit more than...
He's $3 million more than Harrison Barnes. So it would have to be a package deal. It would have to be Pat, Derek Jones Jr., and Troy Brown Jr. Troy Brown Jr. is a restricted free agent this year as well. But I mean, I think he has a future, but he's not going to command a lot of money. Derek Jones Jr. is an unrestricted free agent. You have another 2 years on Pat's rookie contract after this year. And you would also be saying, look, by doing this, we recognize that Pat is not going to play this year. We also understand we're taking a tremendous talent loss in sending out Collins. So we're going to play the lottery again this year. But then we're right back into swing of things, going into 2022, 2023. Maybe that's like a, what are those years called? Like just a regrouping year?
Yeah, gap year. The problem, though, is we're already talking about Atlanta having too much depth, and then they're going to take on more depth in this trade.
No, that's the thing. It's only Pat. It's only Pat they get in there, really. Because hell, you could even try to flip someone else or whatever. But if they want more salary flexibility,
right,
while also getting a young guy on a rookie deal moving forward, then going into next year, they're getting Patrick Williams, who has 2 years remaining on his rookie deal. They don't have to keep Troy Brown Jr. They can renounce him. They don't have to keep Derek Jones Jr. Because he's a free agent as well. So they get the best of both worlds. They get financial flexibility for the offseason, and they get a guy on their rookie contract who might also be more defensive-oriented as a long-time solution at the four than Collins is, and maybe that is what they want instead of having a big-time scorer. Because, again, this goes back to my earlier point. If you wanted a secondary scorer, you would have leaned into John Collins right now. Like, that's obvious, right? So if you don't want to do, if you haven't done that, presumably it's because you don't want to on a certain level.
That problem goes away
with Williams.
Yeah. I mean, I would think they would want, if they're going to trade Collins, I think they'd want to do it for more of an established talent.
Yeah. Makes sense. I don't
think they're trying to take a step back with the Collins trade, but Atlanta is a team certainly to keep an eye on, like, given how the first
Portland pick.
Yeah. Well, the Portland pick's not conveying this year.
It might never convey. No. No, I hear you, but I think there's something interesting there. Again, we don't know what they want. That's the thing. Like, for a long time, we thought that John Collins was playing on borrowed time because DeAndre Hunter was kind of like the player they wanted at the four, but then it turned out that Hunter really couldn't stay healthy.
Yep.
So I realized that Williams is not healthy either, but that's not a pattern. That was a freak accident in the fifth game of the year. So I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do is my point here. I agree with you that they should rather sell off several pieces for one, but then I think their best solution is actually waiting for the offseason, because roster spots are going to limit their flexibility by making an in-season trade.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also hard to identify many teams that need a power forward on that type of a contract too. Like, it's Minnesota could make sense, and San Antonio could make sense. But again, like, that's the opposite of consolidation trade. You're probably going to get two or three guys back instead of you're packaging three guys. So, like, Ben Simmons might be their best hope if they are going to do a consolidation trade. And I think part of the appeal of that is that right now they have the 28th ranked defense, where they're tied with Sacramento at 113.1 points per 100 possessions. So I think that's why he would appeal to them. But I mean, this trade deadline is really setting up to be like a fascinating series of dominoes, because like, it all revolves around what the Sixers do with Simmons. But if they are able to offload Tobias, then that opens up so many more packages for them. If not, are they willing to wait it out? Are they willing to just sell low on him and screw fit? We'll take John Collins and we'll play Tobias Harris three. Like, there are so many teams I think that are reluctant to make a move. I know John Krasinski of The Athletic said this, like, the Wolves don't want to make a big splash until the Simmons situation is settled one way or the other, because they're still interested in him too, but they still don't want to give up Towns or Edwards. So, like, how do those dynamics play out? So this is going to be just, you could talk yourself in circles for hours about all this stuff. And I'm sure we will over the next month, but
And I'm going to retract my trade offer, because I just realized that this summer is when Kevin Huerter's contract extension along with Trae Young's are kicking in. So their financial flexibility that they would get from any trade with Chicago is kind of pointless.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
Trae goes up by at least 20 million.
Yeah. They're going to be in cap hell for a while.
Yeah.
Especially
which also makes it very necessary for them to get out of that Danilo Gallinari contract.
So that's a good place for us to wrap up. Thank you all, as always, for listening in today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.